Dynasty Radio, 1382.
Ah, Uncle Jaseneb, life, liberty, prosperity, yet another decree stolen from you and me. The ancestors of the Nile Valley left us other messages too, like, let food be your medicine, and let your medicine be food.
Why is food and drugs under the same administration? They putting drugs in the food to keep money accumulating now. They like to call it additives and preservatives, slowly killing everybody that purchases it. Can you pronounce what's on the back of the label? Then that shit we need to keep off our dinner table now. The food is what's fueling these diseases, paying rich doctors all these medical fees, but they never cure you, they just keep you in need, cut you open for surgery and let your pockets bleed. See, we got away from what we used to eat. We forgot we were kidnapped and forced to eat meat. We ate from the earth, so we communicated with it. We cut the conversation, now check the situation. See, blacks the leaders in heart disease, cancer. We give them money like pills is the answer. Damn, I'd be wrong if I didn't pass the info. Hormones in the food got you thinking like a nympho. Wonder why all these young girls so thick, like a baseball player. Steroids is it. They got it in the vegetables, the fruit, the meat, and all the fast food they be selling in the street. It's a war going on, and our diet must reflect it. We all got the power, we just gotta direct it. Neglect it, never refer to the metal nature that them whole tests the father of medicine.
Peace, family, and welcome to another episode of Food for Medicine here on Dynasty Network 1382. Like I said, welcome to everyone who's been with Dynasty family and those who are new. We have another dynamic topic for you today, and I'll get into that in just a second. But first, I'm going to do some housekeeping. My name is Dr. Phoebe Adiro, and I am one half of your host, usually on the show, but my sister KJ, Kenya Jones, is not with us today, but she'll be with us hopefully next week, but we're going to hold it down without her in her absence. So just to introduce myself, my name is Dr. Phoebe Adiro. I am a naturopathic physician, for those of you who don't know. That means I'm a primary care physician who specializes in using natural therapies, alternative therapies such as diet, nutrition, acupuncture, hydrotherapy, all those things that are natural and holistic and non-invasive for the healing of the body. And my passion, of course, is using diet and nutrition and herbs in order to bring about that balance, because in my opinion, if your diet is jacked up, then pretty much any therapy that you do on top of that is not going to be as effective, because diet and nutrition is like 90%, if not more, of your overall health, because what you are what you consume. So if you're consuming things that are not supportive to your body, then that's exactly what you're going to get out of it. So just for those of you who don't know, Dynasty Radio 1382 is a revolutionary African-centered radio program or a radio network that offers you several different revolutionary radio programs throughout the week. Please check on our website, dynastynetwork.net, for the other shows that we have available to you at different times. You can also email us at info@dynastynetwork.net for any comments, concerns, or questions that you have. Show ideas we also accept, because we love hearing from the community about things that they are interested in us presenting information about, because that makes our programming much more useful and purposeful for you, the people we're bringing it to. So check us out on those for sure. We also have we have several like pages for the different shows. We have Food for Medicine included. Please go to our Facebook like page and like us, because we love when you like us. Also, remember that this is a live call-in show, so we're always encouraging our listeners to call in and wrap a pace with us on here, because we love we love your questions. I love your questions. I love when people add to the conversation, because it just makes the overall show much more dynamic and, again, purposeful and tailored to the audience that we're bringing this to. So you can absolutely call in if you have a question for me, a comment, something to add to the discussion. The number that you'll call is 646-716-7572. And then you'll be prompted to press number 1 if you want to raise your hand and ask a question or make your comment. But if not, you can just call in and listen on your phone, or you can listen online at dynastynetwork.net if you go on there, or on our blog talk, on Dynasty Network blog talk. So let me tell you the premise of our show, because we do have a purpose. Like I said, we always do things purposely here. So in order to set the tone every Friday for our show, we like to give and put out into the universe our purpose for doing the show, and that is that Food for Medicine was created to enlighten African people on how to use food, not just as an alternative to medicine, but also to use food as it was intended by our ancestors. This show is designed to teach you how to eat to live instead of living to eat. Ashe. So let's get into today's topic we're going to talk about today. Today I decided to talk about antibacterial herbs, really antimicrobial herbs, because all these herbs that I'm going to talk about today and foods that I'm going to talk about today, they're not strictly antibacterial, and herbs just don't work like that. There are herbs that are better for one ailment more than another, and yes, all the herbs I'm going to talk about are antibacterial, but they're also just antimicrobial across the board, so they can be used for things other than just killing off bacterial infections. They're usually, if they're antibacterial, they're also antiviral, antimicrobial for my other microbes like fungal infections, parasites, and I'll mention that as well, because you know you can't really dichotomize herbs, because that's just not how nature works. Nature is holistic, so if it deals with one, it's going to deal with many, right? So usually at the start of each show, I give people a little background as to why I decided to do the topic for the day. And as far as the antibacterial herbs, really this is just something that I had contemplated about for a little while, because this is just something that I've always observed, or I can't say always, but I've observed more recently in my life, because, you know, just being in the medical field, you see things and it's just like, man, like I need to be a part of the change in this. So antibiotics are just being overly used throughout the world, especially in this country. Since I live here in the States, you know, I see how it's being used here, and we're just overly medicated in general. But antibiotics are absolutely something that has been overused, and we are seeing the results of this, of the overuse of those medications in the types of diseases, particularly the bacterial infections that we are able to acquire now that we weren't acquiring back in the day. I read several articles about it over the years, and I was looking at articles yesterday and today just to present to you all today. And there's actually a really good article on MotherEarthLiving.com that kind of talks about the history or a part of the history of antibiotic use, especially when it comes to modern-day antibiotic use. I'm trying to pull it up on my computer now. It's called Herbal Alternatives to Antibiotics, and it's a nice little compilation of history as well as information as far as what the effect of overuse of antibiotics is. And I'm going to pick out a part that I want to read in just a second, but I'll just talk about the fact that we're over sterilized. So there are things that happen when you overuse antibiotics, and I see this. Things that our ancestors were getting as far as the natural the inoculation of being in their environment, that was happening. And people got sick because, you know, people got, you know, certain ailments based on being exposed to certain viruses, certain bacteria, fungi, whatever. But the whole point of having an immune system is that you are protecting yourself against these things. There's no way you're not going to be exposed to any bacteria, any virus, any fungi, mold, et cetera, parasites. So the whole purpose of you having an immune system is in order to defend your body against it. And that's something that people were able to do back then. You know, some people weren't able to fend it off, and so you have people dying of certain infections. But at the same time, not everybody in a whole family dies. You know, there's some people that are able to fight it off. Their immune systems are more robust, And that's just a part of life, you know. Same thing happens to other animals. People are able to, some are able to defend off the infection, some aren't. But with each generation, so let's say the people, so let's say there's a infection that affects most of the people in a community, and some people get sick and they get through it. Other people get really sick and they stay sick for a long time, and some people might die. Other people just might have damaged the body due to the sickness. But the people that survive, or the people that didn't get sick during all the midst of the illness, those are the people whose immune systems were able to adapt a little bit better so that they could survive. And then when they have children, you know, especially if you breastfeed and you pass on that type of immunity to your children, that next generation of children is going to be that much more equipped in an immune system sense to deal with the onslaught of certain microbes in the environment. Your immune system is downloading information daily. The fact that you go outside and you breathe the air, you know, that you, you know, eat the food, if you're eating food that comes from the earth, you know, the fact that you are around other people, you know, you kiss people, you hug people, you put your hands in your eye and your mouth, you know, you are constantly taking in things into your internal body, and your immune system is constantly taking information in and saying, okay, this is something I need to protect myself against. This is something else. This is something else. And it's making antibodies. It's making enzymes. It's 24/7 protecting you. And the only way that it can know what it is that it needs to protect you from is if it's exposed to it. Now, what is the overuse of antibiotics? And not just antibiotics, but also hand sanitizers and, you know, all of these sterilization cleaners and things like that, all of this over cleansing of things, you know, even the fact that we wash or that we have to wash our vegetables and fruits and things. Not saying that we shouldn't, because there are things, the way that foods are processed now, or I should say the way that produce is handled now, that it requires us to wash everything that we eat because we don't know the farming practices of everyone anymore. But, you know, let's say you're gardening your own food, you know, being able to just get food from your own garden like we used to back in our ancestors' time and just rinse off or maybe just dust it off, you know, there are microbes in the ground, there's, you know, probiotics, you know, there's all kinds of things, enzymes, all kinds of things from the earth that also go into building up our immune system. So all of these things, what I'm saying, are there for a reason. We're not apart from nature. We're a part of nature. So the fact that we have these chemicals in the form of antibiotics, sterilization cleaners, and we're constantly gelling. Hand sanitizing gel, gelling our hands and stuff. The fact that we're doing that all the time makes our environment a little bit, or it makes our exposure a lot different from our ancestors' exposure. So we are killing off a lot of not only the bad bacteria, but the good bacteria. We have bacteria all over us at every second of the day. There's good bacteria on our skin, in our hair, on our feet, and there's good bacteria inside of us, in our gut mostly, but they're there. And all of these good flora, these natural flora of the body are there to protect you. What they do is that they actually create a barrier between you and your environment, and they make it to where other microbes will not have room to colonize on your skin or in your gut. So when we have manifestations of a breakdown in that natural barrier of the flora on our body and inside of our gut, we get disease. You get skin infection. You get ringworm. You get eczema. You get candida, parasites in the gut. Because if you had a normal gut flora, those things would not be able to colonize and set up shop in your body. So we need bacteria. We need certain microbes in our environment on us because it's a part of our natural protection. You know, you don't see dogs and cats and other animals. You don't see, you know, monkeys in the trees sanitizing their hands after they've, you know, done, you know, different things. You don't see animals doing that. And, you know, people think, you know, people will say that humans are this higher form of life, but we get a lot more sick than all the other animals. And I think that there's something to be said about that because we've so separated ourselves from natural living. Now, I'm not saying that you shouldn't wash your hands, you know, after you, like, go to the bathroom or after you, you know, if you've coughed or if you sneeze or something. You know, there are things that we have to do nowadays because the environment has created a condition that we need to do certain things. But I'm just saying that we have to think about how we're overusing a lot of these antibacterial agents and the effect that it has on us. But today I want to talk about how you get away from that as much as we can. Because like I said, the environment has created a necessity. That's the whole point of creating a product. And because the medical industry, the conventional medical industry is built up around a business, they definitely did a good job of creating the need because now a lot of people do need some of these medications or, you know, as far as immediately needing them, they need them in order to take care of urgent matters. And now a lot of us can't, you know, get away from them as quickly as we like. But the way to move away from them is to start incorporating these natural, holistic remedies and modalities to our arsenal for healing ourselves from these infections. Because what did people used to do before we had antibiotics? You know, they had ways of healing themselves before we had these chemicals, so we have to get back to that. Because what we will notice as I go through these, a lot of these herbs don't affect the natural flora on the outside or the inside of the body. You can take them and you can take them and they won't actually destroy natural beneficial flora. They'll actually just destroy those microbes that don't need to be there and then keep it moving and keep the immune system strong without disrupting the natural balance of things. So with that being said, let's get into some of these herbs that are going to help us do that. And the first herb that I have on my list is elderberry. I love elderberry, especially black elderberry. Sambucus is the botanical name. It's a great remedy just to keep on hand because everyone can use it. It's something that the whole family can use, kids and adults and elderly, you know. So the reason it's great to keep on hand is because it's an overall great antimicrobial, period. It's really good for bacterial infections, but like I said, this is an herb that is kind of broad spectrum as far as the microbes it can treat. Elderberry enhances immune function as a whole, so it can help with internal bacterial as well as viral infections. Elderberry is also extremely antioxidant because it's a berry like all other berries. It's very rich in these antioxidants. So it is useful to help inflammation that can accompany infectious conditions and those inflammatory conditions that accompany infections that can cause pain. For example, strep throat is a great example of a bacterial infection that also is accompanied by inflammation. Also, ear infections is another good example. GI infections as well, they're usually accompanied by a lot of inflammation causing gas, bloating, diarrhea. So that all is helped by something like elderberry, which is very antioxidant and anti-inflammatory as well as antibacterial. So you can use the berry. The berry is most commonly used, but you can also use the leaves and the flowers of the plant. And there are several different forms that you can find elderberry in, such as elderberry tea, of course. Elderberry syrup is really good. If you have a child that has a problem most of the time with taking their medicine, if they're sick, give them some elderberry syrup, and then you probably won't have any problems. It's like jam, basically. It's just like it tastes better than jam because jam is usually made with grapes. So unless it's a different kind of berry jam, it's so good. But just make sure you find one that doesn't have a whole bunch of excess sugar in the syrup. Make sure they make it with something more of a whole food like honey. Some of them may use like vegetable glycerin. Just make sure you read the ingredients and that whatever is in the elderberry syrup is to your liking. Elderberry can also be found in lozenges. This is especially good for sore throat because it's soothing, and then it's antibacterial to help with that. Elderberry jams do exist. There are people out there that are preserving elderberries. Depending on where you're at, you might be able to find somebody that is making elderberry jams. If not, you might be able to find it online. I know there are a few stores. I think I've seen elderberry jam at, like, World Market, and I've seen it at some health food stores or, like, stores that carry international foods. Some Asian stores might carry it, or stores that carry, like I said, international foods, because everybody else is eating elderberry jam except for people in the United States. So, well, as abundantly as, you know, other people in the world. So definitely get up on that. And I've also seen elderberry juice. They actually have elderberry juice at some health food stores, so you can look for that as well. This is just a great way to get a nice immune-boosting food, antibacterial food in a delicious way. So this is especially good for children, like I said, people who are stubborn with taking medicine. The taste is pleasant, and it does the job. So definitely keep that in mind. Keep that on hand, so that you can, deal with those bacterial infections as they come up in your family. Berberine family herbs are the next class of herbs that I have. And I put these all in a class because they usually are talked about in the Chiro Medica as a class of herbs. The berberines are these antimicrobial plants such as golden seal, Oregon grape, coptis, or golden thread, as it's also called, barberry. These are all berberine herbs. And the berberine the berberines are these compounds. They are constituents in the herbs that give these herbs a bright yellow color. So think about golden seal. You can clearly see the really bright, bold yellow in golden seal, and that is because of the presence of berberine. And other herbs in this class, too, are also a little yellow, more or less, than golden seal. And but the berberines themselves have very antimicrobial properties, and they're especially effective for systemic and non-systemic infections. For example, if not properly, and I say that they're effective for systemic and non-systemic, I'm saying it because of this. If these herbs are not properly digested and absorbed by the digestive tract, most of the berberine won't get into the body systemically. Hence, you know, people taking powders or capsule or tablet forms of these herbs may not, unless their digestive system is very robust and very strong, they have good stomach acid and everything, good absorption capability in their gut, then most of the berberines are not going to be taken up in this form. But if you do take them in this way, of the capsules, the powders, or tablets, you will have great antibacterial activity in the gut itself. So berberines in their whole form, like as a whole herb ground up or made into a tea or made into a tablet, they work really well in the area that they are dissolved in, you see. It doesn't mean that it's being taken up in the gut very well, but it means that it's in the gut. It's circulating around in the gut, and it's killing stuff in the gut. If there's a microbe there that shouldn't be there, it's killing it, period. So it's really good for local infections wherever you actually place the herb. So if you have, for example, a bacterial infection or other pathogenic bacteria growth in the gut, and you take a berberine tea, it'll be fabulous for that. Candida, any kind of diarrheal bacterial infection, great for that. Parasites, too, I will say here, because, again, remember, this is a holistic herb. It doesn't just kill bacteria. It kills many things. So it's also be good for parasite infection. Another thing is, because it's a really great local herb, it's very effective as a local antimicrobial, berberine herbs can also be used topically in the same way. So if you have, like, an infection on the skin, like a ringworm, or if you have some kind of bacterial infection on the skin, staph or something like that, you could use a poultice where you can use a wash of these berberine herbs after you make like a really strong tea or a decoction of these herbs. You can use that as a poultice or a wash in order to kill whatever bacterial infection of the skin that you're having. I've seen people also use it as a wash on the outside of the vagina or the outside of the testicles and the penis if they have some kind of bacterial infection of the genitals as well, just as a wash to use for that. Definitely talk, if you have herbalists in your area, definitely talk to them about using herbs that way so that you can have the best administration possible. If you're having problems like that on the genitalia, you can put, you can make the tea and do a sitz bath and sit in your sitz bath and also help with relieving any kind of yeast infections and things of that nature that have, that's causing especially itching smells and things of that nature. Really helpful for that. I've used golden seal in patients that have had problems like that, and it worked really, really well. People say that it's really helped them. So definitely don't sleep on the berberine. Now, if you do want to take the berberines internally for a more systemic effect, then make sure that you're trying a tincture form, so an alcohol extraction. And this is because the berberines are a little bit better extracted through alcohol tinctures than from water and then when we try to absorb it in our gut. So if you want to take it for an infection that, you know, like an infection that you think you want to treat systemically, then do it as an alcohol extract. But there are other herbs that are better for systemic use, and I'm going to talk about those in just a second. Also, as a side note, since we're talking about gut infections, berberines have been shown in many studies to be effective against Giardia, Trichomonas, which is the vaginosis bacteria, and it also helps really well with like those diarrheal gut infections, which are bacterial infections. So absolutely, it's a very effective herb. Let's see what else I want to say about that. That's pretty much it I have to say about the berberine. Tea tree. That's the next herb that I want to talk about. Tea tree oil. Tea tree is a native Australian herb, of course, whose essential oil acts as a potent antimicrobial agent. Studies show that it's active against candida and bacteria such as staph, strep, and that's better if it's used as an inhalant. In lab studies, tea tree oil kills MRSA, which is a very bad, pretty nasty skin infection. Some but not all studies that I've read have shown that topical applications can eliminate the colonization of the bacteria in the skin and nose. And I think a lot of that has to do with just the consistency. A lot of these herbs, another thing too I want to mention, is that you have to be consistent with the use of these herbs in order to see results. You can't just use it once and not use it again for a week and think that you're going to get results. You have to be consistent so that the constituents can actually build up enough in your system and be in contact with the bacteria, the offending bacteria, long enough so that it can cause them to die off. So if you don't do that consistently, then you're just going to be kind of killing some off here and there but never really clearing the infection. So I wanted to make sure I mentioned that. Let's see. So I talked about the skin infection. Another really tough problem to treat are not only the candida, but the candida, and a lot of times when people have candida and that yeast bacteria in the gut, they can also get these fungal infections in the nail as well. And so even though that's the bacteria, it can contribute to fungal growth in the nails as well. And a lot of times they accompany one another. So this is another example of how the herb is holistic in that it kills one thing, but it also kills other things. But tea tree oil has been very effective in treating nail fungus. One study found that 100% tea tree oil applied twice a day for 6 months more than half of the patients that were in the study. And it cured the infection in 18% of those people. But a lot of times it's the consistency. If you're consistent with it, then you'll do it. 6 months is a long time for people, but guess what? Candida infections take a while to kill, and likewise, the fungal infections that they enable are, you know, especially in the male beds, take a long time to kill off as well. So you just have to be really consistent. Also, make sure if you're using tea tree oil topically on the skin, make sure you're using a carrier oil. And I say that because many people, or some people, develop skin irritation after application of the straight tea tree oil because it can be a little harsh and acrid to the skin. It's very drying. So you want to make sure that you're using like a light carrier oil, like an almond, like a sweet almond oil, jojoba oil, which is very close to the molecular structure of our own oil that we secrete. So just make sure you're diluting it some so that you're not putting that straight-up oil on your skin. The next herb I want to talk about is calendula, or marigold, as it's called in some countries. Calendula can be used in like a first aid type sense because it's antibacterial and anti-inflammatory. So you can make a wash or an ointment out of calendula, and it can be used for wounds. It also helps the wound once it's, you know, been washed and everything. It also helps it, the skin, like the damaged area, heal and repair itself much quicker. Calendula can also be used as a wash and taken as a tea in the prevention and healing of pink eye. It's very soothing also for pink eye because there can be itching and irritation that comes along with it, so it's very good for that. And calendula can be prepared in a few different ways. I've personally prepared it in infusions. I've seen it as a tincture. I've seen it in lotions. I've seen it in ointments. I made a calendula ointment before. It's actually pretty easy to make. As an ointment, calendula makes a great all-purpose antibiotic healing product, kind of similar to, like, the Neosporin and those triple antibiotics that people like to keep on hand in their pantries or in their cabinets. And, of course, other herbs can be added to the calendula in order to make it more suitable for the purposes that you're using it for. So you can absolutely mix some herbs. So, like, say you're making an ointment and you want to add something to make it more soothing, you can add, like, aloe, you can add some berberine-type herbs to it to make it more antimicrobial topically. So you can do what you need to do, but just as a wash or just as a, you can use it as an ointment for the different topical purposes. There aren't any precautions that I have to caution people about with calendula. It's a pretty safe herb. There's no interactions. There's no problem with children being able to use this for scrapes and abrasions and cuts and little wounds that they get. It's gentle. It's gentle for enough for the whole family to use. The next herb I want to talk about is clove. I love clove. And though clove is typically used as a topical analgesic to help with pain, and that's kind of a numbing herb to numb like things with dental procedures and things like that, clove oil or clove-infused oil or the essential oil of clove can be used to kill bad intestinal bacteria and parasites. In fact, clove is a very common folk medicine herb for the purpose of, you know, getting rid of infections. And you can really see, like, if you look at the formulas of old folk remedies, things that our ancestors used, to detox people seasonally, to put in these deworming formulas, you'll see clove. You'll see clove in a lot of those things because it has great antimicrobial properties. And parasites do not like clove. Any kind of worms, things like that, they hate clove, and it'll drive them right out. And clove is also very useful for killing pathogenic bacteria in the mouth, such as those that cause periodontal disease, thrush. It can be used as a mouthwash to keep the overgrowth of bacteria that cause bad breath and tartar buildup down. Also, for internal use, you can use as a spice in cooking or make up a cup of clove tea, especially if you are healing from a bacterial infection. You can absolutely take in the tea that way. If using topically, like on the skin, make sure to always dilute clove oil. Do not ever use clove oil directly on top of the skin because it can be very hot and acrid if it's used that way. And like I said, if anybody has any questions or comments about anything I've said so far, you can always call into the show at 646-716-7572. And if you need to ask a question, just press number one so that you can raise your hand, and then we'll get you. But if there are no questions, I'm going to continue. Let's see. The next herb I want to talk about, I love, and it is marshmallow root. Marshmallow root is so fabulous, not because you can make marshmallows from it, but it's just a very soothing herb. So it's anti-inflammatory. Being an anti-inflammatory is one of its biggest claims to fame, but it also is antimicrobial. It has these tannins. Like a lot of roots have tannins in it, and marshmallow root is no different. So the tannins found in marshmallow root, they're effective against bacteria, and, you know, the bacteria that it's most effective against are those that cause urinary tract infections. So as a multifunction herb, because it's anti-inflammatory, it's soothing, it lubricates, it softens, it heals, but then it also has this added benefit of being antibacterial. Now, you know, it's kind of a multi-use herb for a UTI, because what do you need during UTI? You need something to soothe, you need something to get rid of pain, and you need something to kill off the bacteria. So it's very useful for that. So it's very healing in that sense. And marshmallow root can be taken as a tea. Honestly, you don't even have to heat the water for marshmallow tea. You just place the water in a jar, then you take your dried herb and put it in some room temperature water and allow it to steep overnight, and then you'll have some nice marshmallow tea. And it has kind of like marshmallow has a natural mucilage in it, so it has like a texture like okra. So it has that kind of fiber in it. So when you steep it as a tea or when you make it as a tea, you're going to have a little bit of that tea is going to have some body to it. It's going to have a little bit more of a thickness than a tea that doesn't have that kind of fiber in it. So just know that marshmallow does do that. But that's what you want. Those are the properties of marshmallow that make it soothing and healing and, you know, great for that anti-inflammatory relief. Okay, so the next herb I have on my list is usnea. And usnea is technically a lichen or kind of like a moss, but it does have antimicrobial as well as antifungal properties. But it's a powerful antibiotic. It is so powerful. It's used to treat urinary tract infections, strep, staph infections, respiratory and sinus infections, as well as fungal, yeast. That's what I mean to say. Yeast or like pathogenic bacterial overgrowth in the gut, as well as vaginosis. So vaginosis bacteria are also affected by usnea. Usnea is best used as a tincture because the antibacterial constituents are best extracted in alcohol, kind of similar to the berberines that I was mentioning. There are no known precautions with usnea, but I would definitely consult with an herbalist if you are pregnant before using it, because from what I understand, it can cause some uterine contraction, and you don't want to take any herbs that cause uterine contractions while you're pregnant because you're trying to hold on to the baby. You don't want them to come out. So just make sure you consult with an herbalist about that. The next herb that I want to talk about is uva ursi. Uva ursi is often used as a tincture or capsule for treating UTIs as well. It contains compounds that are effective at killing pathogens typically associated with UTIs, and uva ursi has an added benefit of naturally having an affinity to the tissues of the genital urinary tract. I personally have had great great success with using Uva Earthy in combination with some other herbs, herbs that I've made for formulas for different patients that have had UTIs, bladder infections, different things going on in the pelvis that were of an infectious nature. And because of this, it's just a great urinary tract herb. But I do have to caution that because of its strength, it should not be continued for longer than 2 weeks. And the reason for that is because I've noticed that it can start to kill off gut flora. It's that strong that the herb can actually kill off gut flora if it's been used too long. And then the constituents in Uva Earthy can have a toxic bioaccumulative effect in the body, which means that those parts of the herb that kill off the bacteria that's causing the problem actually can stick around in the body longer than, you know, than other herbs would. And if you continue to let it build up in the body, it can cause some ill health. It can just make a person really sick. It's not going to kill you, of course, because you're going to feel that it's too much, and then you're going to back off. But, you know, you have to take a lot of the herb for that to happen. But it's just not something that you need to be taking every day. That's the whole point of me saying this. You don't need to be taking Uva Earthy every day. You just take it until your 2 weeks is over, your UTI is cleared up, or bladder infection, whatever it is, cleared up, and boom, you're done. Uva Earthy is definitely not to be used by children. It's not to be used by pregnant women or nursing women. And then if you have kidney disease, too, I also don't give Uva Earthy to patients with kidney disease because it's a little bit too hard on the kidneys if the kidneys are already in a disease state. So there are other things we would use instead of Uva Earthy for that situation. Now, yarrow is another one of my favorite herbs. I love yarrow, but it's so bitter. Ooh, but guess what? It's bitter, so good, bitter. these little tiny flowers with such a big bitter taste, they have a number of different uses. As a powder, you can actually use the yarrow flower powder to stop bleeding quickly, and it can help prevent infection and wounds. You can also, let's say you have a fresh yarrow plant, you can also make a poultice from the fresh or the dried leaves, depending on what you have. If you don't have powder but you have dried leaves, you can make a poultice by, you know, wetting the leaves or chewing them up, depending on what you have available to you. And then what you would do is you would place that poultice over the wound, and that would help to keep it from getting infected or to help with bleeding. Infused in water, yarrow can be used as a mouthwash because it helps with keeping down bacteria in the mouth that can be pathogenic. Yarrow speeds the healing of canker sores while also preventing infection of those sores. As a tea, yarrow is used to fight urinary tract infection and respiratory infections, especially for those prone to these infections. So, you know, if you're a person that kind of always gets these upper respiratory infections or is a person that always is getting UTIs, then this herb is great for you because what yarrow does is it supports the immune system, it boosts it, and it also in itself is antibacterial, so it's going to kill those pathogens at the same time that it is supporting the immune system. And a lot of times when people get these reoccurring sicknesses, these reoccurring respiratory infections, these reoccurring UTIs, a lot of times it's the same infection that's just flaring up over and over again. You actually haven't gotten rid of the infection. It's the same infection you got the first time that you got it, and it just never cleared up. So now it's become this chronic infection, and that is a big problem with the immune system. If you're having an issue with that, it's a big problem that you should address, and using herbs like yarrow will absolutely help the immune system combat that. I do have to caution that because yarrow is another one of those herbs that can cause uterine contractions, we should not take it when we are pregnant. So pregnant ladies, sorry, you can't take yarrow either. Let's see. Mullein. Mullein is another herb that I love, 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 love. I love all herbs. I'm going to say that about pretty much about any herb, but mullein is great. I like using mullein-infused oil, especially. It's a great remedy for ear infections. especially when it's combined with allium family herbs like onion, perfect for ear infections. Use mullein flowers to create an infused oil, or you can just buy the already infused mullein flower oil. And when so this oil can be used as a drop, as ear drops, to kill bacterial infections in the ear, and it works very well. And then speaking of using onions as an antimicrobial herb, onions are commonly used but often overlooked as medicine. I have to say, it's very slept on. Onions contain antimicrobial properties and have been used for many years, many, many years, with other allium family veggies like leeks and, spring onions and wild onions, any allium, even garlic is a part of an allium family. But garlic can be a little acidic, and we don't want to use that if we don't need to. But all of these allium veggies, but onion especially, have been used to treat everything from minor illnesses to major disease and inflammation, both internally and externally. And it's the sulfur compounds in onions that are the key elements for their use as an antibiotic, because sulfur is very antimicrobial in itself, and onions and other allium veggies are very abundant in sulfur. In one study I was reading, onion was tested on mice against an antibiotic-resistant strain of Staphylococcus bacteria. And the results show that the onion had protected the mice against the pathogen and significantly reduced any inflammation. So it not only is the antibacterial, antimicrobial, but it's also anti-inflammatory. So it will help with pain and, you know, swelling that's associated with some of these bacterial infections. This is absolutely true of a sore throat in this case. Both have been used to help fight off the residual effects of viral infections as well. So you can also use onion for viral infections, like the cold and the flu. And onion, I can also say, is used antifungally as well. So you can use onion to help with fungal infections. So again, herbs are holistic. They don't just do one thing. They do many things. So it's antibacterial. That's our topic today. But onion is also antiviral and antifungal, and a great addition to the diet, or as a, you know, using as a single herb. Also, onions can be used to help with preventing and killing off pathogenic gut bacteria overgrowth and yeast infections, while also being a prebiotic to normal gut flora. So the fiber that is in onion actually can feed our natural gut flora that we need in order to protect us and to help us synthesize our nutrients, like our B vitamins and everything. They like onion. But the pathogenic bacteria like candida and some parasites and things, they hate it. So, again, very holistic, very balanced in its healing properties. Onion's high phytonutrient content also makes it great in addition to its antimicrobial activity, because it helps the body prevent future infections. Because if antioxidants are in the body, it just overall boosts the immune system, and it just makes the body so much more equipped to deal with infections of any kind. So definitely don't sleep on onion. And again, I said this in other shows, it's always best to get these foods in their raw state as much as possible. But, you know, if you cook onions, and that's fine too, but, you know, try to get it raw when you can. Also, with the onion, I want to say the way that you use it for ear infection, you can also use onion juice. Let's say you don't have the mullein oil. So you can use, you can cut onion in half, you can steam it. Just put it in a steamer basket and steam it over some water. And then you just want to get it to where it's just getting, like, juicy, and there's some condensation of the juice able to be squeezed out. And I want you to let the onion cool off. You don't want to, like, just put some hot onion juice in somebody's ear, but, you know, just let it cool off some, and then once it's cooled off, test it on the back of your hand before you put it in your child's ear or put it in your own ear, and once it feels comfortable, take that juice from the onion and just squeeze a few drops into the ear that's affected, and what that will do is that will kill off bacteria that is causing ear infection as well. Let's see. Okay, olive leaf. Olive leaf and its extracts and all of the above. Now, the olive tree and its leaves are popular for its ability to resist infections. It's known for that. It's known for its ability to resist, like, attacks from certain microbe infections and insect infestations that other plants are not able to protect themselves against. So with years of observing this by native people, you know, they were able to understand that, you know, this property can be utilized in medicine for people as well. So, you know, of course, in modern times, scientists have been able to isolate the unique molecule called allulopine, which is in the olive leaf, that's responsible for the antimicrobial or the antibacterial effects, in this case, of the olive leaf. And allulopine is the key nutrient here, and it's most concentrated in the leaves than any other part of the plant. But it is in other parts of the plant, but it's most concentrated in the leaves. So olive leaves are also rich in phytonutrients and antioxidants. And remember, you know, we want antioxidants and other phytonutrients because it helps to boost the immune system and make the body that much more robust against infection. So all of these things are very bioactive in the olive leaf and makes it very effective as an antimicrobial. And there are also some bitter phytochemicals or phytonutrients in olive leaf that all of them together work towards it resisting bacterial damage from its environment. And then when we eat it, when we eat olive oil, when we eat olive leaf extract in its concentrated form, we can deliver these antibacterial properties into our bodies. Now, olive leaf can be taken as a tincture. It can be taken as a capsule or a tea mixed with mint if you get the olive leaves themselves. And it's actually very good. You can use these. Oh, you know what? I even see olive leaf extract in this kind of like, it's almost like a syrup, but it's not a syrup. They use like vegetable glycerin, I think. I'm not sure of the base, but I've seen it at some health food stores, these olive oil extracts that have different flavors and things like that. But just be careful, you know. I don't know. I think some of them add, like, elderberry to it. You may have it in your area, but if it's just elderberry, then that's great. That's, like, an awesome product, the one that I've seen. But you can just use the olive leaf, and it'd be fine itself. But anyway, you can use olive leaves and a variety of different ailments in order to address them. You can use it for a sore throat. You can use it for a sinus infection. For sore throat, it's especially good if you can drink the olive leaf, either as a tea or, as I said, like the syrup made from the olive leaf. Tincture would be good, too, because then you can just drop it in the back of the throat and let it kind of drain down in the back of the throat. And you can do that a few times a day. Also, sinus infections are helped with olive leaf, gut infections, stomach ulcers, because many stomach ulcers are caused by a bacteria called H. pylori bacteria, believe it or not. Also, tooth infections. I personally have used olive leaf for wisdom teeth that I used to have that used to come up and go down, and when they would come up, sometimes they would get, like, low-key infected. I'd be like, wait a minute, what is going on? And I refuse. I know I'm a doctor, but I refuse to go to the dentist because there's no naturopathic dentist that I know. Unless I find one, a sister or a brother that's a naturopathic dentist, I hate dentists. So I refused to go to one. So I had this painful, inflamed wisdom tooth. And my wisdom teeth used to come up and go down like that all the time. So I just would find things to use to help with that. And olive leaf extract. I use the extract. I didn't use the tea. But I have had the tea before, and it helped with like upper respiratory stuff. But, yeah, that olive leaf really helps. That, and I think I might have also been taking some hibiscus tea as well, just for the vitamin C. So anytime you take in vitamin C-rich foods, it just really helps with infection as well, because vitamin C is very supportive to the immune system. But, yeah, I'm not saying that everybody's tooth infections will be helped with that, especially depending on how extensive it is. You definitely don't want to mess with infections in the head too long, because they can become systemic a little bit more readily. So I ended up getting my wisdom teeth taken out. This was a while back. It was just too much. But it did help with the inflammation that they caused. And once I had put that in my regimen, I really didn't have as much of the inflammation as much. But, yeah, they had to come out. It was like a serious business. But that's a whole different story. However, for the pregnant sisters, sorry, but you cannot take this. Avoid the extract during pregnancy. It doesn't mean you can't take, you know, you can't have a tea like a mint tea with some olive leaf, you know. But you shouldn't take any herbs for a long time, especially while you're pregnant. You don't want to go into a detoxification, because then any detoxing that you do is going to go straight to your baby. So just be very careful. Talk with herbalists in your area if you're thinking about getting these herbs, because they'll be able to give you all the information you need. And then because they're there with you, they'll be able to monitor your condition, your personal condition, because I can't see you. I don't know everybody's individual condition. So I want everyone to be as safe as possible. Now, the last herb that I want to talk about is oregano. Oregano, in addition to being a great flavor to add to food, a great herb to add to food, oregano also fights bacteria, it fights viruses, it fights fungus, everything. But it, since we're talking about antibacterials, it is a great antibacterial herb. During an infection, such as a strep throat or like an ear infection, a toothache, if you have like a diarrheal infection, a bacterial infection, you can use the oregano essential oil or the extract of oregano, and it can be taken in a capsule in order to speed healing from these ailments. It's to kill off the bacteria. Now, if you're using an essential oil, make sure, like, that's why I recommended it be in a capsule, because if you try to take the essential oil in your mouth, it can be very hot, it's very spicy, so you just want to make sure that you are protecting yourself. Also, if you're going to, oregano oil can also be used topically. The topical use can be for any kind of fungal, any kind of bacterial skin infection. It's very, very useful for that. But just make sure, just like with the tea tree oil, because it can be very acrid on the skin, straight, make sure that you're using a carrier oil to prevent this type of skin irritation. So, again, you can use jojoba, you can use sweet almond oil, any kind of oil that I would recommend a light oil, like the oils I mentioned. But, you know, if you have a favorite oil you like to use as a carrier, then go right ahead and use it, just as long as it's, you know, it's something that is easily absorbed on the skin. That's what you want. Now, real quick, I'm done talking about the herbs. Those are all the herbs that I have on my list. I want to just talk, I talked a little bit as I went along, but how you can use these antibacterial and these antimicrobial antibacterial herbs. Of course, you can use some of them as teas, like the elderberry flowers. You can use the clove. You can use the oregano. You can make a tea out of the leaves of that. You can make a tea out of pretty much most of those herbs. You can make a tea out of calendula. You can make a tea with, or more like a wash. But yeah, you could use it that way, and that's a really nice way if you are into making teas. So I would just use like 1 teaspoon of the antibacterial herb to a cup of hot water for 5 to 10 minutes. Then you would steep it for 5 to 10 minutes. And, you know, you do your hot water by bringing it to a boil, then taking it off the heat, and then putting your herbs in the hot water, either in a tea ball or a disposable tea bag, whatever you have available to you. Or you could just throw your herbs in the pot of water. That's what I do, and I just drink around. I drink around the tea or the herbs. So that's what you can do for that. Also, you can do infusions, and herbal infusions are simply made, again, by putting the herbs in the water and preparing them that way. But they differ from teas in that you're using a larger quantity of the herbs in order to get a more strong effect. So making a more concentrated preparation, basically. So basically, all you do is you you get you like a larger jar in this case, like a quart size canning jar is best because they can hold water. They can hold up the hot water a lot better, and then you can close it and seal it. So you would put the just boiled water in your jar, throw in this case, you would use more like a tablespoon or two of the herbs, and then close it, and then let it just sit and steep overnight. And then you can put it in the fridge, or you can drink it room temperature, do whatever you like with it, because now it's like you've made a nice, strong infusion of the herb. And that's something that people do. I recommend people do that if they don't like to make tea every day. So let's say you're trying to take it for, I don't know, you have a sore throat and you want to make some olive leaf tea. So you can make a big batch of your olive leaf tea as an infusion and then keep it in the fridge and then just drink from it, you know, over the course of about 3 days. You don't want to keep your tea longer than, I would say, 2 days to keep it really fresh. 3 days is stretching it. So that's for those of you who don't like to make tea every day. Or if you have multiple people in the house that are dealing with an infection and you want to make a batch so that you can dose out to, like, let's say, like multiple children or multiple people, doing the infusion is another good option to keep a batch that way. Now, you can also do your infused oil. And with the infused oil, all you have to do is get you, like, another jar of or, like, a cup of your favorite oil that you want to use as a carrier. And, of course, you need to have, like, a heat-proof dish or oven-proof dish. Throw your herbs in there, whatever herbs that you're trying to use for oil. Let's say mullein. You're making a mullein oil. So you would throw about a half a cup of your mullein into that cup of oil or two cups, however strong you want it or how dilute you want it. And then you would heat that oil up in the oven, you know, on a low setting, like no more than 200 degrees. Some people, if you have a dehydrator, you can even use that. So just trying to heat the oil slightly in order to extract the constituents from the herb. And that way, it's kind of like you're making a tea, but with oil. But then you just do that for about 3 hours, I want to say. And then after 3 hours, you can take it out, and then you can even let it cool for a little longer in the same container so that more of the herb can have a chance to get into the oil. And then after that, after it's cool, you can strain the oil and get a clean jar, and then you can put the infused oil in there, and then you'll have the oil that you need to use medicinally whenever you're ready. Just store it in a, you know, airtight container. Make sure the jar is closed tight. Keep it, you know, in a cool, dark place, like in your cabinet. And try not to put your hands in it. Just use a utensil like a wooden spoon or a metal spoon to get it out as you need it. And that will help to preserve its freshness. So, yeah, so that's pretty dope. That is all of the administration routes. And, of course, you can get tinctures. But most people aren't making their own tinctures. You can just get the tinctures from health food stores of the different herbs, the extracts, the capsules, the, you know, tablets of different herbs that I mentioned. Syrups and whatnot. So yeah, so definitely go out there and build your medicine cabinet up with some herbal remedies for bacterial infections, because we're trying to get away from the chemicals. We're trying to get back to nature. We don't want to over-medicate ourselves anymore, because what is it doing? It's creating greater risk for infections. It's not really making us protected against infections. It's making us more susceptible to infections. The bacteria, which have been here longer than us, there will always be bacteria. There will never, ever not be bacteria. So we can never have a one drug or many drugs that can kill them all. And they are smart, y'all. Bacteria know how to adapt. The same way that we know how to adapt to their environment. They want to survive just like how we want to survive. And the more that we create these super medications, these super antibiotics, we're going to create super bugs. And the super bugs are going to be bigger and badder, and they're going to create bigger and badder infections. So the way that we get rid of that, or we combat that, is by building up our immunity. Because there's always going to be things, right? So we work on ourselves in order to deal with the outside world, right? We're part of nature, not apart from nature. So yeah, so with that being said, that's all I have for you today. I hope that this show was informative, and I hope that people were able to get down some great information to use for healing themselves. like I said before, definitely hit our like page up, like us. I have a like page as well for my practice in Kingu Health, N as in nighttime, apostrophe, K-I-N as in nighttime, G-U, help. I also have a website that you can check me out at, which is Ask Dr. Adiro, A-S as in safflower, K-D as in diamond, R-A-D as in diamond, I-R-O, AskDrAdiro.weebly, W-E-E, D as in boy, ly.com. AskDrAdiro.weebly.com is my website. Check out my services. If you have any comments or questions, you can email me. I sell herbs at my herbal product store. I also have a community marketplace where I have products that I don't actually make myself, but that I endorse because they're pretty good and I want people to have access to them. And I have a bunch of other things that you can find on my website that are dealing with me, information about me and my practice. So if you have any questions, like I said, don't hesitate to contact me. Yes, but in the meantime, I hope that everyone has a fabulous weekend. Have a great rest of your Friday and catch us next time, next week on Friday, same time, same place. All right. Catch you.